Continuing a big international news story is tensions which don't appear to be dissipating at all between Russia and the Ukraine. The tensions are such that the United Kingdom is now withdrawing some embassy staff from Ukraine. Western powers like the UK and the USA have sent military goods to Ukraine, which they say will allow Ukraine to mount, decent defense should Russian troops invade. Vladimir Putin continues to say these are just military exercises. We're not planning to invade at all. But hey, NATO, promise us that you won't ever expand eastwards ever again, and we might deploy those troops to go and exercise somewhere else. We're joined now on Zoom by Dr. Zachary Paikin, who is an expert in this area. Zach, good afternoon. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, John, for having me. And I should say as well that I just got my third COVID shot a few weeks ago, and I contracted COVID a few days ago, and I've had a pretty easy time with it so far. So I'm very grateful that I had my third shot, because if I had only had two shots and my second shot was 6 or 7 months ago, I think I would have had a pretty rough time with it.
Okay. So do you think that George Orwell is ever going to turn into war, or not ever, but in the next 6 months, 3 years, that there is going to be some kind of Russian military incursion into Ukraine?
Oh, if it happens, it'll be much sooner than 6 months or 3 years. We're on the brink of war potentially in the next several weeks right now. There's a lot to be concerned about, and I think we should take the current situation very seriously.
Brink of war. You're as blunt as that.
It's entirely possible. I mean, Russia has put forward a series of ultimatums to the United States and to NATO, which are, in effect, non-starters, at least many of them are, for Western countries. The notion that, Ukraine can never become a member of NATO is completely out of line with NATO's open door policy. So these are, irreconcilable visions for Europe's security architecture. Which means that, if there's no diplomatic solution to be found because they are irreconcilable positions, then it's very likely that the only alternative for Russia to be able to achieve its core strategic objectives in Ukraine is through military force.
Should NATO continue to have an open door policy, or should they consider changing that and accepting that the current membership of NATO is as big as it's going to get, particularly on the eastern front of NATO countries?
Well, I mean, I think that NATO's open door policy is an anachronism at this point. I think it reflects an era in world history in which American power was unchallenged, and therefore the United States was free to shape Europe's security architecture as it saw fit. That is no longer the case. The United States now faces peer challengers, even though the United States is the most powerful country in the world and will remain so for several decades. Nonetheless, there are other powers out there, such as China and Russia, that have the ability to constrain the deployment of American power and to push their own visions for what security arrangements should look like in their own region. Now, it would, of course, be too humiliating for NATO at this point to, withdraw its open door policy altogether. And that, of course, might even require revisions to the North Atlantic Treaty, which in and of themselves, would necessitate being ratified in national parliaments or in the U.S. Senate. And of course, that's just not, going to be able to happen. There isn't a political will for such monumental change. But what you could see happen is perhaps a political declaration agreed among NATO governments, basically imposing some sort of a moratorium on NATO expansion for a long period of time. Some people are suggesting 10, 20, 25 years. We'll see if some sort of deal like that can be struck. But I'm not optimistic right now, because Western countries, by and large, for the past several decades have insisted on the principle that Ukraine and other sovereign states in Europe have the right to choose their orientation, the right to make their own security arrangements. And if they want to join the West, then that's, only the business of the West and the country that wants to join the West. And it's not the business of any third country to interfere. So it's very hard to see how you can, constantly say that year after year, decade after decade, and then all of a sudden, put together a major volte-face in vis-a-vis Russia. So this is going to require some very tricky diplomacy in the weeks ahead, and I'm not sure that the circle can be squared necessarily.
Zach, you mentioned Russian strategic objectives earlier. I mean, what is the core Russian strategic objective. Is it to shut down NATO from further eastward expansion, or is it to return Ukraine to the Russian motherland? Because if it's the latter, then it would be pointless for NATO to agree to a moratorium, because that's not the core strategic objective of Russia.
All right. So Russia's core strategic objective, vis-a-vis Ukraine, is to prevent its incorporation into NATO and even to prevent, NATO from being present in Ukraine and cooperating militarily with Ukraine and continuing to supply Ukraine with certain forms of military equipment that, Russia may find, if not threatening, then at least complicating to its own strategic designs. So that's basically what Russia would like to see, not just Ukraine in NATO being off the table, but also NATO in Ukraine being off the table. And this is part and parcel of Russia's core strategic objective of being recognized by the West as an equal great power with effectively a veto, over the shape of Europe's security architecture. So when you say about returning Ukraine to the Russian motherland, Russia's not interested in annexing the bulk of Ukraine and being responsible financially for managing that territory. That's not something that would be very appealing to the vast majority of the Russian population. But Russia certainly does want to make sure that Ukraine remains within its so-called sphere of privileged interests. And a Ukraine that is aligned with the West is something that has been explicitly for Russia a red line for a very long time.
I mean, if the brink of war turns into actual war, I mean, what, Joe Biden and Boris Johnson and others have said there will be serious consequences for Russia, but when pressed as to whether those serious consequences will involve Western military involvement, they say no. So really the only weapon, in inverted commas, they seem to have is sanctions. And is the threat of extreme sanctions enough to deter Russia if they don't get some kind of diplomatic solution that suits them?
But remember, extreme sanctions would cause pain not just to Russia, but also to the United States and Europe, right? And if those are the only kinds of sanctions that are capable of deterring an armed attack on Ukraine, then the United States and Europe need to be prepared to bear a certain amount of economic pain, particularly at a time when gas prices are very high and in the middle of the winter, and at a time when Europe remains extremely dependent upon Russian oil and gas. These are very complex and difficult decisions that the United States and Europe have to take together right now on the question of sanctions. And, it should be recalled that, they've been sanctioning Russia for the past 8 years to little effect, right? Russia is more of a problem now than it was 8 years ago. So the lesson I think that needs to be taken to heart here from Western countries is that, countries are prepared to deal with, economic hardship in the pursuit of what they see as their own core interests. And Ukraine and the orientation of Ukraine is much more of a core interest to Russia than it is to the United States or to Europe. It is an interest of some sort to the United States and Europe, but it is an absolutely core vital interest from Russia's security perspective. Whether we agree with that perspective or not, they truly do believe that way. And they have taken action over the course of the past 8 years to sanction-proof their economy with significant foreign currency reserves. So they are prepared to weather the economic storm. Obviously, they would prefer not to have to weather that storm, but they're prepared to do it if that's what it comes to.
Thank you very much. Dr. Zachary Pagan is a researcher at the Center for European Policy Studies in Brussels.